Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Just outside of our studio doors is a small monarch butterfly way station. It's been fascinating to stop for a second to watch passersby slow, even stop, to watch the butterflies that have begun to accumulate over the last couple of weeks. I have to admit, I've been one of those people from time to time. It's amazing to contemplate the journey these insects have in front of them, a 2,000-mile journey down to central Mexico where they'll overwinter, reproduce, then expire, upon which a new generation will begin life and follow the migration north. But monarchs are growing fewer in number. Some estimates suggest the population is down 90%, and that concerns scientists. The reasons involve loss of habitat and loss of food source, primarily milkweed and nectar-bearing flowers. But organizations are coming together to provide habitat. Our little way station was beautiful all summer and attracted butterflies and moths all season long. Okies for Monarchs and several other organizations have organized an event this Saturday where you can learn more about the effects to restore monarch populations, about the migration and about the animal itself, and the small part you can play in creating habitat. Monarchs on the Mountain takes place tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 2 at the Turkey Mountain Urban Wilderness Area. There'll be plenty of activities, including talks by my guest today, Rebecca Quinones-Pinion, a longtime monarch researcher who's currently the Monarch Outreach Coordinator for the National Wildlife Federation. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Rebecca Quinones-Pinion, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich, for this opportunity.
Yeah, so the numbers vary, but it looks as though, taken on average, that the monarch butterfly population is down about 90% from its two-decade high. And I suppose more importantly, we've seen double-digit declines the last several years. Do scientists have a strong hypothesis about what's causing this decline?
Well, yeah, these truly caught our attention about 4 years ago when the numbers went down to only observing 0.67 hectares in occupied by the monarch population on the wintering sites. And there was a big concern about it. And what we have learned since then is that the main reason for this decline is the loss of habitat for the monarch butterfly. As we know, They migrate from Canada all the way down to Mexico, using all the east side of the U.S. And we have noticed that there has been a severe change of land use, and that can be translated in the lack of host and nectar plants, which are crucial for the survival of the monarch butterfly. And also, the other reason is the use of herbicides and pesticides in agricultural lands.
Now, we've been using herbicides and pesticides for a long time in America. Why do you suppose we're seeing this decline now as opposed to maybe earlier? Or is it just a matter of we're doing better research on estimating how many monarchs are overwintering in Mexico?
I think it's one of the reasons that we have noticed this even more now is the fact that there is more research happening, more people involved in wildlife conservation, and more citizen science happening as well. And that has helped us to understand better how the behavior of the monarch happens during the migration. And also, there has also been some change in the land use again. There were some lands that were protected based on some government programs, and those lands were turned into agricultural lands in the last 4 years. And we think that that has been also the reason why those areas were heavily sprayed with herbicides, so they could turn those lands into agricultural lands.
So fallow land that was that had like milkweed and various nectar plants, there was a heavy use of herbicide basically to put those that land back into agricultural production. And with that, you saw maybe populations that have been using it, all of a sudden they have no habitat.
That is correct. And actually, there is a paper from Dr. Karen Oberhauser that creates these correlations between the use of herbicides and the decline of the monarch population. So when the increase on the use of herbicides happened, that's when the monarch population started declining. So, but let's just make sure that we understand that it's not only because of the use of the herbicides, but it's because those lands were turned into crop lands.
So when I think of the monarch summer habitat, for the most part, I think of it as sort of in the Corn Belt in the upper Midwest. Is that a fair statement?
That is correct. Yes, it is.
And are there programs done to mitigate the fact that perhaps more farmland is in production? Are there roadside programs going on to plant habitat? What's going on in the Midwest? About 4 to 5 of the generations of the 5 or 6 generations a monarch has takes place really in their summer habitat, right?
Yes, that is true. Well, many organizations, federal agencies, state agencies have come on board to create a monarch conservation plan, and all of them are working towards either the reconversion of those lands to monarch habitat, or at least ensuring that some portions of those croplands or agricultural lands have monarch habitat, which means they planting native milkweed and nectar plants. And also, we know that the I-35 corridor is very important for the monarch butterfly, because funny enough, that's exactly the pathway of their fall and spring migration. So there are some programs that are creating some pocket sites or rest areas throughout the I-35 corridor that are helping to create these habitats for the monarch. So when they are traveling, they can find some stopover places where they can rest, lay some eggs if they need to, and have a source of energy, which is the nectar plant.
I was reading one piece of research from the upper Midwest. I believe it came from the University of Illinois. And they were talking about the fact that, yes, there's more land in production and there is loss of habitat. They were saying in the natural areas, there's still plenty of milkweed. And what they were seeing was loss of monarch population counts in various areas where they were taking counts, but not to the extent that you're seeing in Mexico. Could the migration be some part of the puzzle, that we're losing a lot of butterflies on the migration that we might not have normally done in years past?
It could be too. I mean, the monarchs, as many other migratory species, are facing other challenges as they migrate. Many of the areas that they have to cross over are now urban areas. And as we were mentioning before, the I-35 corridor, for instance, or a highway I-10. And there are some studies that have shown that there is a high rate of roadkill for monarchs, for instance. And if they go into those urban areas and they don't find rest areas, they don't have monarch habitat, they are facing those challenges. And that's why it is important for us to focus on creating monarch habitat within the urban areas as well. And of course, I mean, there are also the natural threats that the monarch faces. And that's the other reason why the monarch lays so many eggs, because we know that based on the natural threats, let me do this again.
When you look at the monarch population, which I assume the main way we can tell how the population is doing is by doing counts in the wintering grounds in central Mexico, the population fluctuates quite greatly over 15, 20 years. So it sounds like the population is capable of rebounding fairly quickly. Is that the case?
That's that's quite interesting. That's something that we have seen. It bounces back. Unfortunately, what we have not seen lately is that bounce back. I mean, we have seen a very, very small recovery of those numbers. And that has been the main concern, because mathematically speaking, we could tell that the spread is not the same. So that's why we are focusing on increasing the monarch population in the north, so we can ensure that there is a larger number of monarchs migrating. And despite the fact that they are facing natural and anthropogenic threats, we will be able to see a larger number overwintering. And, of course, also the monarch is facing some threats in the overwintering sites. There is also the issue with the loss of habitat, the fragmentation of habitat in the overwintering sites, and also the lack of some of the understory, which is a way to protect them and give them source of water, for instance.
I was going to say, I know that there were some serious storms in Mexico. Was it last year or the year before, in which a lot of that protective layer within the fir forests in central Mexico were destroyed basically by storms? How secure is that habitat, the wintering habitat, in central Mexico today? Of course, illegal logging and habitat loss has been an issue there for some time. Is the protections there for the monarch population now?
Well, that's a very interesting point. And what you have mentioned, we can just turn it into climate change. And that's a consequence of the fact that we have created that fragmentation of the forest. So in that turning also into a different behavior in the climate, which is, you can see it translated into severe storms. And a few years ago, we also witnessed a freezing time when there was even snow in the wintering sites, and many monarchs died as well. So we can tell that definitely the loss of habitat, it's translated in many, many ways.
Now, you used to work at that in the habitat there for several years. When you talk to people who had been watching them for years, how did it compare when you were there, say, to 15, 20 years ago in the wintering site? Was just the numbers staggering, the difference?
Well, actually, it's not only speaking with the local people that I have learned that the numbers were totally different, but I had the great opportunity of visiting the site 30 years ago. I was able to go and visit those sites, and I can tell you that the difference is drastic. It's very dramatic. When I used to visit those sites many years ago, we used to walk those grounds, and we had to be very careful because the monarchs were covering the floor, the ground of the forest. It was just amazing. It was a beautiful thing to see. And you could see all these clusters of monarchs hanging on the trees and covering the tree trunks. The last time that I visited the overwintering sites was 3 years ago, and I can tell you that it totally broke my heart to see that the landscape looked totally different. But still, it was very emotional to see the monarchs and in that area, but definitely the numbers and the landscape looked totally different. One thing that I noticed on that trip is that there was a serious lack of a source of water. The creeks that are surrounding the overwintering sites are practically dry, and the monarchs were struggling to find water. So you could see them like trying to suck up the water from small sites where the mud was standing, and there were no other sources of water for them.
My guest today is Rebecca Quinones-Pinon. She is the Monarch Outreach Coordinator for the National Wildlife Federation. She's been a longtime Monarch researcher, and she'll be appearing and talking about the efforts to preserve the Monarch butterfly population at Monarchs on the Mountain. That takes place Saturday from 10 to 2 at the Turkey Mountain Urban Wilderness Area. There'll be talks by her, and there will also be efforts for people to figure out how to create a small monarch habitat in their backyard, plants to plant, and all sorts of information about protecting the monarch population, especially right here in Oklahoma, which is a prime migration route, both in the spring and in the fall. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. The monarch life cycle is really amazing. I had some misconceptions. I always thought that no monarchs made the full one cycle of the trip. I thought that it would take several generations to make the trip, and I learned that, in fact, the last summer generation does fly 2,000 to 3,000 miles down to the Mexico wintering sites, and how the monarchs know to get back to central Mexico.
That's a very interesting question, Rich. There are many theories about why the monarch is capable of doing that trip. We know that there are different factors that are helping the monarchs to go back to their overwintering sites and then return during the spring to the north. And one of the main things that we have learned is that they follow the distribution of their host plant, which is the milkweed. And that's the plant that they use to lay their eggs and where their larva grows and receives all these sources of energy and protein to become a beautiful monarch butterfly. And also they receive the milkweed, which contains lots of cardinalites that will help them to avoid some predators and then ensure that they can survive. And the other thing that we know is that the wind, it's another factor that helps the monarchs to follow their pathway south. And we're still learning a lot. There was a study that I just learned about that I was talking about the ultraviolet light. It seems like they are very receptive to the ultraviolet light, and that's another thing that is helping them to keep their pathway south. So it's a very interesting insect. It's amazing, very resilient, and we are still learning a lot about their biology and ecology.
So from let's just take it through a year. One generation of monarchs make it to Mexico. They are fairly dormant through the winter, and as soon as warmer weather comes in the spring, what do? They mate and lay eggs, I guess?
Yes, and you know, I like the way that you are saying it. They are fairly dormant because they are not, like, fully dormant. They don't hibernate, but they are just overwintering. So they're still fairly active in the wintering ground. And once the winter ends and the spring comes into action, the monarchs start being more active. They mate in the overwintering sites, and then they start their way back north. And that's when they start laying eggs on their way back. And that's why it is very important for us to ensure that during the spring we have enough milkweed available for them.
Mm-hmm. So that first generation, they will die en route, and then the next generation will fly up to their summer areas?
Yes, that is correct. So that first generation, the generation that comes back from South Central Mexico, they will start laying eggs on their way back. And at some point, that generation will die, and the new monarchs will keep flying north. So there will be four generations in total involved in all that migration. And it's the fifth generation, as far as we know, the one that will migrate south again. That fifth generation is the one that we know as the Methuselah generation, because amazing enough, that generation will live through the winter. So let's say it's from September, October, all the way to February, March, normally.
Mm-hmm. And they will make that entire migration south, and then the cycle starts over again, right?
That is correct. One thing that very interesting that we have observed, and some citizen scientists have observed as well on the ground here in South Texas, is that some of those monarchs will still lay some eggs. And that's very interesting. And once more, that's why I'm saying that we still have a lot to learn about the monarch butterflies. I mean, we didn't even know about the fifth generation until maybe 1-2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So we're still learning a lot. Is it possible that monarchs are finding other places to overwinter? I know, like, out in the Pacific, in the Rocky Mountain West, they all go to the Pacific California coast to overwinter. And I know there's some that are going to South Florida. Is it possible they're finding other places to overwinter?
Yes, definitely. Even in Mexico, there is another small place which is not part of the Monarch Butterfly Biosphere Reserve in the state of Mexico, where the monarchs create a small colony. And that colony is not very well known yet, but it's there, and it doesn't happen every year. And also, we have learned that the monarch migration pathway changes from year to year. Sometimes they go more to the southeast side, and then sometimes they drift a little bit more to the southwest.
Do we know why that is? Do we know that why that is? Is it because of local weather, or is it a mystery?
I don't think I can give you an answer why they changed their pathway.
I remember one year, and I think it was maybe an OU football game, when it was like every monarch was going right through Norman, and literally there was hundreds of butterflies crossing the length of the field through the game. And it was just amazing. And I've never seen that concentration before or after. So I assume that when you're in a concentrated area, the numbers can be kind of crazy amazing how many are going through a central migratory corridor.
Yeah, that is correct. And we wish we could count them, right? And that's why we have some estimates. I mean, the best that has been done till this point is that we kind of guesstimate that in the overwintering grounds, when we count 1 hectare or estimate 1 hectare of monarch population, that can be translated between 10 million and 50 million monarchs. As you can see, still there's like a big range there, and we can't really tell. But seeing that cloud of monarchs flying, it's just amazing. It's a beautiful phenomenon.
It really is.
Yes.
Now, at this Monarchs at the Mountain event, I'm sure there'll be information on how to create backyard monarch habitat. What's the most important habitat for them? Would it be a large area where there's lots of milkweed, or even a backyard, or maybe a little patio habitat? Is that something monarchs are going to be attracted to?
Definitely. Yeah, and that's one thing that we want to encourage people to do. And sometimes when we are speaking to them at these events, they tell us, I don't have a large area to plant a garden. And we're like, it doesn't matter. If you have a very small area, even if it is like 1 square foot, please try. Because the monarchs are extremely smart, and they will find it. Hmm. And another thing that we have learned, there are some recent studies, scientific studies showing that the establishment of pollinator gardens, monarch/pollinator gardens within the urban areas help to bring back the numbers of all pollinators. And even some studies have shown that rare species of pollinators are back, just due to those small pollinator gardens. So we should be encouraged by that and ensure that even if it is a small area where we can just have one native milkweed and a couple of nectar plants, that will help the monarch butterfly. And, you know, and the beautiful part of that is that we're not only helping the monarch butterfly, but we're helping other pollinators. As long as they are native nectar plants, the monarch will love them. And that's the beauty of a monarch butterfly. They are generalists, so they can use most nectar plants. They will definitely take advantage of those. And definitely, once more, milkweed is it's key because that's the plant that they use to lay their eggs. But, native nectar plants is just the best.
Now, there's a lot of organizations that are busy trying to create a monarch habitat in the backyards, in public parks. Okies for Monarchs are one of those. How big a difference do you think that can make in the monarch population, especially in a flyway like Oklahoma is for the migrations?
I think it can make a big difference. And let me tell you something. It won't be only a difference to help increase the monarch population and other pollinators, but also to create awareness among the public about the importance of protecting the monarch butterfly. So that's the other thing that we focus on. We try to outreach and engage others in monarch conservation by creating these gardens. So when we are creating gardens in urban areas, that helps people to pass by and see that garden and bring their interest to that and learn more about why it is important to protect the monarch butterfly. It's one of our main pollinators, and we need to ensure that pollinators survive.
You can learn more at Monarchs on the Mountain this Saturday at the Turkey Mountain Urban Wilderness Area. Rebecca Quinones-Pinion, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rich, for this opportunity. And I want to invite everyone to not being afraid of creating a monarch garden. We are here to help you, and we will be happy to give you all the information and to create a monarch garden.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Rebecca Quinones-Pinion is the Monarch Outreach Coordinator for the National Wildlife Federation. She'll be the featured speaker at Monarchs on the Mountain, which is scheduled tomorrow from 10 to 2 at the Turkey Mountain Urban Wilderness Area. But because of the threat of inclement weather, it could be moved to the West Side Y. For final details on the location of the event, visit the Monarchs on the Mountain Facebook page. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.